Hey, Nerd Funnelers, we're back. You're listening to Nerd Funnel, where we take all the nerd news of the world and funnel it into your more than willing ear holes. Today we are talking about election 2016. The election so full of ice, we had to talk about it twice. We're back again with our second part coverage of election 2016. Juan is with me tonight, as again.
Hello, everybody. This is just a continuation from last time.
Because he loves to talk about this stuff.
Well, I love hearing other people's perspective about anything.
And this week, Ivan could not join us, but we do have our good friend Mars guest starring tonight.
What's going on, Nerd Funnelers? Looking forward to having this discussion.
So we are back again this week talking about it. What I wanted to kind of enter into this conversation on a... And as a theme to get us kind of rolling, about communication. I know that there was problems of communication in multiple levels, as far as like parties getting their messages out to people, messages getting confused, what the election was really about, communication between,
or getting miscommunication and being made aware that the fact that you were getting wrong information and still being willing to believe what was being told.
Exactly, like the whole fake news phenomenon. That's a huge problem with communication. Communication between races, between countries, of course. So there's a huge breakdown, I think, of communication, which kind of shaped a lot of what this election was about and how it resulted. But I know Mars had a lot to say to come in with starting out, since we already talked your ears off, good listeners. Juan and I will let Mars kick off the conversation. So your thoughts and opinions about the campaign, how it was run, the outcome, major points you wanted to touch on.
Well, I'm more concerned with the aftermath than anything else. It's what really, really bothers me about this, what's going on afterwards, is that as you guys both said, there's a lot of it, what's going on now, and especially during the campaign, at least from how I see it, seems to stem from, as you guys said, a lack of communication. And I think nowhere is that prevalent than at this current time, which people are freaking out about what's going to happen to our country, what's going to happen to...
Do you think that's an overreaction? Do you think that's an appropriate reaction?
Well, do I think it's an overreaction? No, and this is the reason why. We had someone who was appealing to a demagogue. He was making these huge, these incredibly flagrant statements about people of definite ethnicities or anything like that. Now, like, whether or not you thought he meant it, he was pretty much setting off a spark in a room, in a powder keg. Race is a very, very sensitive issue, and like whether or not he actually meant it, it was irresponsible, it was reprehensible. But moving on from that, what kind of concerns me at this point in time is people are accusing Trump supporters for being racist or whatnot, when we know that that's clearly not entirely the case. We have people who voted for Trump because they had other concerns, and I think those need to be addressed. I'll bring up an example. There was a woman who was out on CNN by the name of Azra Nomani. She's a Muslim reformist, and amongst other things, she voted for Trump because she personally felt that the left was not taking the problem of Islamic extremism seriously. And like there have been people who have been speaking out against this for quite some time who get immediately branded as racist, as Islamophobic or whatnot. And I'm like, guys, come on, there's a middle way here. Like, that, you know, two things can be true at the same time. Don't label these people as racist. Let's hear them out and see what they have to say. I think that extends over to a bunch of other issues that like just got ran over, but saying like, you know, it doesn't matter what your concerns are. If you voted for Trump, you're racist. That's not true.
Well, there's a lot of things you brought up there, and let's kind of break it down a little bit. Yeah. So that's correct. Like, not all Trump voters are racist, but we're all racist Trump voters.
I think it worked
that way.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I want to kind of question the statement you made about two things can be true at once. So let's talk about that. Because the left didn't address a lot of the concerns that people had for terrorism and fear and Islamophobia and things like that.
Not even only that, but also, like, you know, the what about the plight of certain people in this country? It wasn't simply a race issue. I think, like, you know, people who voted for Obama twice mm-hmm. actually ended up voting for Trump. So clearly there's more to it than that.
Well, and, I mean, you vote for what's important to you. So, I mean, yeah. you vote for Trump because, you know, Islamophobia and terrorism are foremost on your agenda. Whereas maybe if you are, you know, a homosexual person living in, you know, a blue state, that, you know, gay rights issues and climate issues may be more on your agenda, and then you vote for Hillary, right?
Well, so no, not necessarily, because you had 50% of the country. Like, there was gay minorities that somewhere voted for Trump.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
you have, like, somebody who's extremely outspoken, like Milo Yiannopoulos, who is himself a gay foreign man. I mean, he's white, but he voted for Trump as well. And going back to one of the things you were talking about, like, you know, the idea of saying that somebody is a racist or using specific words to define a person is just asinine in all the way around. The fact that I feel differently about one specific thing doesn't mean that I'm ignorant on the plight that you're experiencing. I, like, just because I'm not a gay person doesn't mean that I don't understand, like, the issues and problems that you go through.
Mm-hmm.
And so for you to say that I'm hopeful is it's angering enough for me. I mean, I'm just putting myself into maybe the average Trump supporter. If you are telling me, hey, you're a homophobe, you're a racist, when I know that none of those things are true, and the more you tell me that I'm those things, the harder I'm going to fight and rebel on what you're calling me to prove you wrong.
And that's that therein lies the breakdown of communication, because communication is not about imposing your will on someone else or your opinions on someone else. It's presenting your opinions in a dialogue, because a dialogue works both ways. So a lot of people go into a dialogue thinking they're having a dialogue, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we come in and, like, oh, we're going to talk about these issues. But you go in with the mindset of, no, I'm going to talk at you about my issues with
dump.
This subject. Yep. It's not about being open to change. You know, you present your case, but you're not actually open to changing it. So that's where the breakdown in communication lies, is the intent that we have going into did you guys ever read 1984?
Yeah.
Or hear about 1984?
I've read Animal Farm, not 1984.
Okay, well, it's like, you know, you have these political ideologues, this political ideology that is, like, ingrained into you, right? And so you have these statements and these platforms and these kind of taglines and tweets and things like that that are become like the representation. They kind of abstract your real thoughts and feelings into these kind of short bursts, right? And those become what you enter into the quote unquote dialogue with, but you forget to kind of break them down, reduce them into your own motivations. And it's when you understand your own motivations and can be open to changing them is when you actually have a dialogue. Because if you're closed up into the kind of reductive synthesis or taglines that sell these platforms, then you are in a worse position to actually have a dialogue, and that's where the communication breaks down. So, like, in 1984, it's like, war is peace, freedom is strength, ignorance or ignorance, or war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength, right? They're these complex ideas that kind of got absorbed into these three things, and people were selling them and buying and selling them without actually knowing what they meant, and they didn't have a voice. It removed their voice, it removed their identity into these platforms. And that's why in that book it says, under the spreading chestnut tree, I sold you and you sold me, because they sold each other out to these ideas, and they actually betrayed their own, like, knowledge of themselves and their own ability to think to that idea, and then thereby could not communicate.
That's an excellent point. That's actually something that I want to touch upon today, especially since communication is so important.
Yeah, nerd books. Woo!
So we're going down on what you said about, like, the chestnut tree and how we're kind of, like, pretty much castrating each other in terms of communication. There's been...
That's a good way to put it.
I think you guys have seen a video that Jonathan Pye has been putting out there. He was just lambasting the left for pretty much... The crux of the video was pretty much... If you don't agree with me, I'm just going to slam you as a racist, or I'm going to slam you as or this, that, or whatever. And so, like, you right here, what I see is, like, we have pretty much dishonest communication and intellectual dishonesty. And what I mean by that is, like, right now we got, like, far left, we got far right. One side is extremely xenophobic. The other side is what I consider to be incredibly sanctimonious and incredibly naive about certain issues. And what you have is, like, since now we have a very, very controversial candidate in office who's... There's a lot of stuff on Facebook going on, for instance. Like, right now, we all got to double down on what we believe. We got to double down on what it means to be a liberal. We got to double down as to what it means to be a conservative. And those two terms have been misused completely. But, like, that's another story. So when you double down, what that means to me is, like, you're pretty much just holding on to the general narrative of both sides. Like, you know, and with charges of racism, charges of you being extremely far right wing, that you won't listen to anything that the left has to say, that's going to break communication down even more. Because when it comes down to it, these two sides end up playing off each other, and they end up splitting up and polarizing us to make honest communication really difficult.
Different sides of the same coin.
Right, exactly. And, like, you know, what I mean by honest communication is, like, you can point out the obvious. You can point out, like, certain points from certain people on controversial subject that have nothing to do with racism. It's just being honest without... Let me put it this way. People deserve respect. Ideas don't. Mm-hmm. Ideas aren't inanimate. Ideas aren't people. Respect the person you're talking to, but, like, you know, their ideas... It's not so holy that you can't criticize it. And, like, you know, by criticizing, I mean honest criticism. I, like, point out some of the flaws in the arguments. There's a compromise. There's a middle way.
And in talking with you, you know, outside of the cast, and you home outside of the cast, and even our last cast, I've kind of softened on a lot of the opinions that I had. Like, I was, during election week, I was fearful and anxiety ridden because I started kind of hardlining, kind of clinging to like what I thought was right, instead of actively seeking to challenge my bubble. But in talking to you and certain other people and having these conversations, I've actually alleviated some of my anxiety in kind of opening myself up to, like, well, you know, Trump may not be the greatest person, his policies may not be all good, but not all Trump supporters are bad at all, and I understand why you would vote for Trump. And I've been reading on Trump's platforms and some of the stuff, and, like, I don't agree with the vast majority of it, and I don't agree with a lot of the stuff that was handled, but on the converse side, the same thing can be said for Hillary. It was just two bad candidates, but I feel more comfortable with the fact that I understand better the positions of the people that voted for him, even though I don't, you know, particularly I'm comfortable with the outcome.
Yeah,
I'm comfortable with the motivations that led to the outcome. More comfortable with it anyway. I'm still not thrilled.
No, and you know what? Right. I think that's part of...
And that's communication. That's what I'm saying. It's like, yeah, I got communicated with.
That's part of the issue that we're having right now is that let's say the losing Hillary side, the liberals, and what are you saying, them trying to double down, they learned nothing. Like, there is a big lesson to it that had to have been learned for all parties involved, which is... Don't just assume because we don't agree on everything that I'm wrong. Like, some of my beliefs and some of the way that I feel and think are valid. And for you to just immediately brush me off as being, like, you're wrong and label you with all these different terminologies is the problem. Like, I am not any of those things. I'm like, we are all complex individuals, and all of our ideas and perspective basically change on a yearly basis. The same person that the person you are now is not the same person that you were a year ago. The issue that I saw with, especially the way that the left handled the situation, was that they kept on telling people, like, if you don't believe what I believe, then you're immediately this negative, like, you're this negative person. Which is, like, no, like I agree with a lot of things you're saying, but I don't happen to agree with, like, the solutions that you're saying. When you're dealing with any kind of minority group, whether you're whether it's an ethnic thing or a racial thing, or a gay or straight or anything, when you are only fighting for your cause and fail to look at the bigger picture, which is like, we're all people and we all have that right to live our lives the best way we can. And for you to immediately come to me and say, well, my rights are being infringed and that's the only thing I'm going to fight for, then I don't really care too much to listen to whatever you have to say, because before you're gay and before you're black, you're a human being, and I should respect those rights before anything else.
True. And, you know, we're also we're human beings first, and then, yes, you know, then it's somewhere along that that, you know, infrastructure or hierarchy of identities, there's an Americanness in there, right? We're supposed to be all Americans.
Yeah, and think about how much stuff we were getting forced down like our throats. And just think about a religious person, like an actual 50-something Christian white person, right? And them having their concept of their world that they've experienced over the last 50 years basically be torn down brick by brick, and being told, like, not only are you going to just stand here and watch me break down your perception of reality, but you're going to like it. And if you speak out, we're immediately going to label you as something. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, nobody has the right to disrupt somebody's perception of reality in any way, shape, or form. And it seemed like over the last, like, at least the last 8 years, a lot of that was happening. Like, well, if you're religious, like, you're immediately like, well, you're anti-gay.
Okay, well, I see what you say, but let's back that up a little bit, because you said no one has the right to disrupt the perception of reality, right? So that's kind of an interesting statement in that, okay, well, does that mean there's no responsibility on the individual to adapt to a changing world?
No, and it's not that. I mean, change happens regardless of whether we want it to or not, and socially things trend. There's society trends just as time lapses. It's just a part of life. But for you to tell me that I don't have the right to speak out is where my problem comes in. And I think that that's where the issue where the left was having that struggle, where they were like, people's perception of reality were being changed and they were just being told, like, you be quiet.
I would have to agree with that. And like, just leading up to the election, I had some really interesting commentary with some people.
Can I rebut to that real quick?
Yeah. Go ahead.
So you said that the left was saying, like, oh, your perception is wrong, and that, you know, we can't infringe upon it. I don't agree with infringing upon someone's right to perceive reality however they want. But when you institutionalize that perception and generalize it for everybody, when you're taking steps, like, it seems like the right side, the more liberal side, was saying, oh, just kind of believe whatever you want, whether it's true or not, and then we'll just institutionalize that. I feel like the contrary, going to the extreme on the opposite side, is dangerous too.
Right. That goes back to what we were saying, that, like, To say that the right, like, was they're just all bad, and, like, you know, whatever decisions they make over the next 4 years are just going to be detrimental to society as a whole, it's false.
But then that's another problem of communication, because remember, look at you, so we say, like, well, I don't have a right to legislate what you believe reality is, but when you start publicizing unreality to the masses as fact. We could all agree that a big problem of this campaign was misinformation, tweets and news reports and false information being disseminated. Facebook is now looking into that, fake news reports, things like that. When that becomes the new normal, when you go to a sources that should be reliable for disseminating factual information in the world, and then they are no longer trustworthy, then what do you have?
I love this, see, because I thought I had a really good point, and obviously I hadn't thought it all the way through, and you basically just put things in a different perspective where I'm having to rethink what I just said not 5 minutes ago.
There's a place in the world, and these are where we need to kind of delineate the lines, and this is where the tough part, the negotiating part comes in. It's like, where does the sphere of, I want to believe my own personal reality with, like, well, where do I go for a reference point in the world of what is actually really happening?
And do you trust any of the sources you talk to? Do you trust anything anymore? Because with all the like what you said, with all the information out there, it kind of casts a blanket of doubt on mm-hmm. everything. And so you're in the middle of, okay, I want to do the right thing. I want to believe the right thing. But okay, what is the right thing? What do I believe? Who do I trust?
If I may connect this to another nerd book, hashtag nerd books, there is a great novel called Feed by M.K. Anderson. And it tells of a near future world where we have the internet in our heads and we're always connected to this feed. And so the people that control the feed, you have every information, anything you want to know about is accessible to you anytime. But you're always advertised to. So the information you have is factual, but the advertisements can be whatever they want to be. Right? So, and that's kind of like what we have now. It's kind of that's what's coming to, except we don't have the internet in our heads. Where we have Wikipedia, which is a, you know, relatively accurate, sometimes not, news source, but we have like Associated Press and Reuters and Britannica and certain factual things, although it's hard when we're human beings, everything's edited to a certain point.
Right.
Yeah. But then we have advertisements and tweets and Facebook and social media, and where these things, when they're shared enough, we have this communal, this kind of, it's kind of reality by consensus. I think Colbert had a good term for it, was truthiality.
Or tribalism. People, you want to group around something that's consistent with your own narrative. You want to gather around that.
So I think it's our responsibility as a society to have both and have the freedom to explore both, but to maintain them separately. And then it's up to the individual responsibility. That's the price of freedom in a democracy, is to police yourself in a certain way, and to have a you know, be informed of your own accord, and then join in these spheres of truthiality where you can inform the popular opinion with with whatever your opinions are. But you need to have, there needs to be a resource where there is as unedited amount of possible, just a baseline, a framework, a reference point that we can have some sort of common reality. Because in this story that M.K. Anderson wrote, no one actually could communicate anymore after this supplanted. So what ended up happening is people communicated their deepest and most basest emotions and desires and wants and needs through advertising language and advertising. Nobody knew what their reality was as a person anymore. And so they kind of disassociated from the actual nature of being a human being. And there's sort of the story, it talks about this one boy who falls in love with a girl whose feed doesn't work quite right. It was planted into her late, and so she doesn't quite sync with it. And so she has kind of a window into what reality is really like outside of the feed. And it's the United States that's become basically the demagogue of the world and basically treats the rest of the world as its resource collector. The oceans are poisoned. They have colonies on the moon that are just like evacuation points for the extremely wealthy as the planet starts to die. And nobody sees this because they're inside those truthiality spheres, even though information, you know, the actual factual information is available to them. Nobody pays attention to it because they're so trapped in these truthiality bubbles of advertisement.
I'm only going to believe what I want to believe.
Exactly. And so right. I believe in the problem of communication, this election was that mixed with, well, where do we draw the line as responsible voters in America as far as Where do we let what we want to believe dictate how we vote as opposed to what is actually happening in the world?
Well, that's where the challenge is. And just leading up to this election, like as I was saying earlier, what really concerned me, like several years ago, I keep telling myself I want to get involved in the political process whatsoever. And I'll be honest, I don't trust media sources. I don't trust left-wing sources. I don't trust right-wing sources. I believe in putting forth the effort to do own research, so I try to just go out there and read everything I can, learn everything I can, try to and talk to people who are quote-unquote experts in this field and just try to think it through for myself as to what sounds reasonably true. And it definitely changed my perspectives on certain issues. And when I was having a conversation with friends on the left, friends on the right, and you know, I'm someone who leans left of center, but I have a lot of friends who identify as Republican, and like these folks, they're not racist. They're like a lot of them are actually fairly reasonable. A lot of them have like what you have views on certain issues that you would consider fairly liberal, and like likewise with those on the with some of my friends on the left. But when you go to the extremes, like I was having a conversation with some folks on wealth inequality, and like I don't know too much about it, but like there's two individuals I was speaking with who just seemed to be so intent on demonizing people on the completely opposite side. Like this person went out of his or her way to tell me it's time to get some new friends, and the plurality of the truth is on the left. What the fuck?
That is a bold like statement to make. Like
That's smacked of bias. That's smacked of bias.
The first thing you did correct there, which I like, and which most people will not do or are afraid to do, is saying I don't know too much about it. Nobody wants to be caught thinking that they themselves are ignorant to a certain topic, especially when they're challenged with it. That's really cool of you.
I'll wax history here, like. Something you might want to look into a criticism of democracy, like one of the ones I think is, you know, it's a really really old work, but it's definitely worth looking into in our time. You look at Plato's Republic,
hashtag nerd books. Oh hashtag god, we're books. Just pulling out all the nerd literature today.
Yeah, all the good stuff. And like he defined democracy as ruled by opinion, and you could jump from that to rule by the mob, and like rule by doxa. Doxa is a Greek word for opinion, I believe. And you know, everyone has an opinion, but how much is an opinion really worth? How much time have you actually spent vetting it? How much time have you actually spent like thoroughly beating it up? And I think if anyone takes an honest, real look at themselves, they'll really agree that there's all these issues that we're dealing with are so incredibly complex that in order that you really have to look into them to discern the truth of the matter. It's not, you can't just say that you got that because of a liberal education. You got that because you're so right wing that it skewed your views. No, like let's look and judge the individual arguments from themselves. Let's get into debate. Let's have an argument with respect for people on the other sides. Again, people deserve respect, not ideas. And let's find out what's going on here. We can do that.
And now that also too, which you bring up, kept saying respect over and over again. That was a huge breakdown, I think, in this campaign, this election, is like people just kind of lost respect for each other. They got blindsided by their own opinions, and I think they just kind of lost respect for the other side.
I saw it too from a lot of the feeds on my different social media, is people having that immediate reaction to, and this is from both ends, like Trump supporters being like, well, you know, if you disagree with any of this, then I don't need to be a friend with you. Or like people that voted for Hillary, like they're immediately like, what's like, well, if you voted for Trump, then I don't need to be a friend with you. My perception is like, I would want to be your friend more, like even more now, mm-hmm. than before, because there's no way for me to know where you're coming from if I immediately disattach myself from people like you and only hang out with people that view the world as the same way that I
do. Yeah, you just get in that echo chamber. And you start closing off the dialogue. You start closing off communication.
Having an opposing view is, well, let's move on to science to something like science for a bit. Having an opposing view, having people who disagree with you is your own, I don't want to say built in, but it's a self-corrective mechanism. You have something you believe in, and someone says something you don't agree with, someone says something that you need to go back and rethink. That is a good thing because it forces you to really look back onto what you believe in and ask yourself, is this the truth or is it not? Like, you know, it forces you to really, really boil down your argument, to really strip down your arguments to like, what are your premises? What are your inferences? Is this stuff really, really true?
Was this election an affirmation of our laziness?
I think so.
Of us being so unwilling to just think outside of our normal box and to actually have like these thoughts and actually have an open discussion where our beliefs may be challenged.
I think so. I think too many people, especially, I think too many people were thinking for us. I think social media was thinking for us. I think social media, and forgive me, I mean, I think we were starting to kind of hive mind out a little bit. I think we were hive-minding. I think the left and the right were both kind of hive-minding inside these social media spheres. I think we were kind of doing a groupthink kind of thing. And I think it was a little bit and think we didn't check it. We didn't say, whoa. We need to check that. We need to check and put a hole in this. And I think it was our fault. I mean, there's plenty of blame to place everywhere, left, right. But I think a large portion of it, too, was like, you know, these are the leaders. These are people that are supposed to be leading us, right? They are supposed to set the example, right? But neither person, I think, on a moral level could have enough respect for themselves and the other person to kind of be like, whoa, look at this campaign. Look what we're doing to each other. It is elementary school. This is what children do. We need to stop and then reestablish respect. We need to reestablish boundaries. We need to reopen dialogue. I think both sides kind of started drawing too many, again, no communication. And I think communication requires effort. It requires very hard work. It's easy to not understand your own motivations and just buy into what's told to you instead of taking the steps we were talking about, like investigating. Like, I used to get a lot of my news from just like CNN and MSNBC and things like that. But I've been really trying to kind of get diverse sources because I kind of found myself going into that little world where I'm like, oh, I'm just reading kind of left-leaning sources. I need to kind of start reading some more, balance that shit out.
It basically becomes we're basically going through narratives. We're basically being sold narratives, other people's narratives on things, as opposed to being able to listen to opposing views. Like, we're just being sold these stories, and we're like, it totally goes into what you were telling me last week. Like, if you're telling me some bullshit last week and you're telling me the same bullshit this week, then I have no reference point to be like, hey, I don't know if you're right, but I mean, it makes sense because of the bullshit you told me last week. And I think that's where we were as a country, is that we were all just so willing to believe somebody else's narrative.
But that's the hard part of as human beings. Like, as human beings, we absorb the world through narrative. We absorb the world through story. So it's hard to just like assimilate data. We have to put a story behind it. There has to be a story, a narrative with a resolution. If that resolution is something we don't like, then we reject the narrative.
I'm going to bring up a really something of a controversial view here. I forgot the title of the book. I was reading this novel in which this author spoke about something called doxastic closure. Doxastic closure just means like you're in an echo chamber. You're not hearing anything else other than the things you want to hear or the stuff that vibes with you.
What novel was this?
I don't remember off the top of
my
head.
What's it called? Doxastic?
Doxastic Closure.
Doxastic. I'm going to look that up.
I remember what it was. A Manual for Creating Atheists by Peter Boghossian. That really good book.
Boghossian. I've heard that name before. Peter Boghossian's Manual for Wasting Paper, Doxastic Closure.
Okay, cool. Hashtag.
So,
hashtag nerd books.
The argument here is that, like, since you've insulated yourself in an echo chamber, you just listen to that narrative. And like, the argument is that, like, you know, most everyone is not. I think by now everyone's tired of talking about the political system. Everyone's tired about hearing Hillary Trump, whatever.
Oh, doxa means belief, not opinion.
Okay,
that's I just popped up there.
Pretty much the same thing in this regard. But like everyone's concerned about going to work, going home, spending time with their families, getting paid, taking care of their life, and like we're so busy in our everyday lives, and like, you know, we don't have time to look at to really put in the work to research our opinions, and it takes a lot of work, especially if you want to like really think things through and get all the information you need to cycle through the bullshit. And when you're not willing to put in that work, it's so easy to fall back into a narrative. And if you're not willing to put in the work, especially to participate in a democracy, do you deserve to be free?
No,
that's heavy, man. Do we deserve freedom?
That's what I think, because it's a responsibility. Yeah. Everyone has to participate. Everyone has to do the work.
Freedom is hard.
Yeah.
Freedom is freaking hard. Yeah. Like.
Those who trade their freedom for security deserve neither.
Wow. Like, it's, it, I mean, when you, a lot of times when you're faced with a good example of freedom for me is going onto Netflix, and I am free now to watch any show I've ever wanted to watch, anytime, all episodes, whatever episodes I want, and then you get paralyzed because there's so much choice, there's so much responsibility. It's like the whole world of television is available to you, and it's like, I don't know, you lock up, and it's hard to make a decision. Same thing if you offer true freedom. True freedom is fucking terrifying. Like, if you had the entire world, that's one of my always thought about, one of the things I thought about, like, God, if he indeed exists, is that he must have been scared shitless because he has infinite power to do whatever he wants. And it's like, how do I decide what to do? Right? So I think it's the same thing as with human beings. Like, the more freedom you have, the more responsibility falls on you to make choices and create order and structure out of chaos.
Keyword being responsibility.
Yeah. And so when you have things set out for you, you have, you know, when you have limits placed on you, then you've got, you know, senses of security, you have boundaries. And I'll attest to the fact that I think some boundaries are good. They give you limits, they give you goals, they give you sets, but there needs to be a balance. And I think certain people are able to accept those limits or place those limitations on themselves, and certain people need to have those limitations placed on them. And in order to make progress.
I don't know. As somebody who's lived in a perpetual state of discomfort for as long as I can remember, one of the things that I don't normally like to brag about myself, but one of the things that I do enjoy about my personality and just my general view of the world is that I enjoy discomfort. I enjoy the challenge of being proven wrong. All I know is that I don't know. And when I meet people that know better than me, I latch onto those people.
But a lot of people are the exact opposite of you. They find that threatening and fearful, and they recoil from that.
And it's also dangerous to say, like, you know, you latch onto someone who knows more than you, because although they know more, and I'm not saying it's invalid. It's like it's you also run the risk of listening to their narrative and their narrative only, and not thinking for yourself.
But here's the thing, like, you are always going, like, if you have that willingness to interact with people, you're going to continue to encounter people that have a different perspective than what you have. And the way that we explain the world basically comes from an accumulation of experiences and stories and narratives that we've heard throughout our life. Mm-hmm. And those people that have a tendency to get stuck and just have like that willingness to be like, well, I'm in a happy state in my life and I just want to be able to experience this happiness for as long as I possibly can, I personally feel uncomfortable because I don't think that life works that way. I think that life is intended to be uncomfortable and challenging, and that's what drives us to want to have a better experience. I don't consider being depressed or going through small bouts of anger as a negative thing. It's a natural part of our emotional structure, and if we don't have those, then we basically are living in a world of bubblegum and unicorns and sherbets and shit.
It's existential growing pains. It's like, I mean, if you subscribe to, you know, survival of the fittest, you know, adaptive evolution, like, the reason things change and progress and get better and stronger is because they face the conflict and the challenge of their environment, and they adapt to change to survive it.
And
they keep the best of the old, and they adapt to the new.
And I'm gonna tie it back into right now with the whole Trump like situation right now, and why my immediate response to it wasn't anything outrageous. It was like, yeah, like I saw this happening. I'm not overwhelmingly like worried about the situation because I know that 50% of the country was going to be pissed off regardless of whoever got elected. Mm-hmm. And immediately people were going to have buyer's remorse regardless of if there's Trump supporters out there right now who are like, I done gone fucked up. Yeah. Like there are like it would have been the same thing with Hillary. And I think that's where that introspective has to come through, where everybody knows that it wasn't going to be a happy transition in any way, shape, or form, regardless of who got elected. And for you to just be so like overwhelmingly just like afraid and just think that, like, you know, this is doomsday. Mm-hmm. Have that emotion.
Yeah.
Go through it and then open your eyes and view the situation for where it is. Like, we have the opportunity to make changes in 4 years. We've made a bad decision. We're gonna have to live with that bad decision, and then hopefully we'll learn from that decision and make better ones in the future. But we had to go through this point in our history where we just felt like we fucked up.
Is there any literature that's or you know, anything you've read? Like Mars and I shared a couple things we read that helped us kind of deal with these issues. Is there anything you've ever read or read recently that kind of helped deal with this?
No. But I've always been a fan of like 1984 and Cat's Cradle, mm-hmm. where you don't have a happy ending. I mean, you have an experience, and I think that's probably like the biggest joy I get about anything in life. Is just like, I just want to go through the experience. I don't know whether it's going to be a good experience or a bad experience. It's just the experience and then what I take out of it, and then I move on to the next thing. I don't have a tendency to dwell on things. I don't see myself as that person who wants that house with the white picket fence and like the happy like family. Like, that seems to me like an extremely boring life to live. And I personally, for myself, would hate to have that happen to me. Like, I prefer having that discomfort of like, I don't know what's gonna happen tomorrow. I might not have a job tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I might lose my house tomorrow. Like, those seem like a lot more of an interesting problem for me to have than just to be like, well, like, do I have enough money to like, do I have enough money in my savings, or do I have enough to buy a second car, mm-hmm. or how many kids can I have and actually successfully send to college? Like, I don't have those thoughts because that's not my version of the American dream.
And I think on a deep level, people need that discomfort. You guys remember of course, I don't know why I bring this movie up so much. It's such a good go-to, The Matrix. Remember in that movie when Smith says, did you know that the first Matrix was a perfect world where everybody would be happy?
Yeah, yeah.
It was a disaster. You know, entire crops were lost. Nobody could really latch on to it, right? You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's true of all of us, is there on some deep level, we need that conflict. We need that. So as much as we want to buy into it as a nation, and as much as we kind of bought into it this time around in the elections, I think we need that to be able to feel like we're actually real.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? And you know what? Even talking amongst you guys, and you know, we're what, like 10 days, 12 days after, you know, mm-hmm. The election, I think that I can honestly like talk to people more often right now, or I've been talking to more people where, regardless of whether they voted for Trump or Hillary, they're having like a weird kind of awakening where it's that discomfort for everybody involved, where like, you know, that if you voted for Trump, your neighbor like is probably pissed, and you have to humanize them you have family members who like, you know, chose it, like picked the other one, and you love them, and you can genuinely sense that fear in them, and maybe you will get to the point where we can deal with each other a little better, just because
I feel like it's that crass, dirty wake up the next morning hangover where you did something really bad with somebody and you wake up next to each other the day after and you're like, oh my god, now we have to kind of like look at each other in the face with like clear glasses and kind of real like ration this shit out and figure out what's gonna happen.
And this might not apply to the extreme left or to the extreme right, but I don't think the vast majority of the country is in either of those two groups.
Well, some people like people have been worried about the extreme or as some would call it, some people have been worried about the regressive left and the populist right for quite some time, and like there are some who believe that a new center is coming up, and I would like to believe that is true, and in my interactions with several people, like I have friends who are Trump supporters, and these are perfectly lovely people who some of them were even Democrats and who just couldn't get behind Clinton, and
right.
So they decided to go the other way, and like we have the example of so many people who are being again branded as racist or whatever kind of epithet that they got, in my opinion, unjustly labeled, and they were people who were just upset with the status quo, and they voted for Trump and not for Clinton, and vice versa, and like, you know, some would argue right now we have an opportunity to really get people talking and see how did we screw up as a people, as a nation, but like my concern is the double down aspect, and like I'm hoping, praying that, like, you know, both the far left and the far right fall off, and like we can return to an era. Now, don't quote me on this; I don't entirely know my history, but I understand, like, prior to the 1960s, people were not so divided. Democrats could talk to Republicans. Hell, Democrats and Republicans, they actually mentored each other in the Senate. And you know, can we ever get back to that? Or are we going to allow like labeling to split us apart? Like, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I get really turned off nowadays when someone tells me like, you had a liberal education, or like, oh, you are a conservatard or something like that. I'm like, guys, can we drop the fucking labels and actually have a conversation here? So do you see an opportunity rising? Do you see a new center maybe coming up?
I think whatever the new center is going to be, it's going to have to be. I think the new center is going to be formed on what the left and the right end up representing, because both sides have to kind of redefine what that means.
I didn't even thought about that.
What left means and what right means. And I think left can no longer be categorically, you know, a certain set of progressive liberal agenda and then this international foreign policy that focuses on open and free trade. I think the new left has to take into account everybody's interest and kind of work with these fears and anxieties people have over open trade, over minority versus majority, over the rights of everybody, instead of focusing on progressing everybody and just opening things up. I think they were ignoring the anxiety and fear. Whereas I think the right has to take into account, okay, well, we need to be more receptive to working with people's boundaries, but not putting up ones just for the sake of putting them up.
Right.
So I think before we can define a new center, I think the left and the right have to be refined, and I think that will go a long way in finding, okay, well, what's the middle ground?
And I can get behind that, and I am a people person. I love people, and I think that it's easier for me to see the best side and the best qualities in people than the negative. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I am optimistic. Like I said, as divisive and as hurtful as this whole like 18-month process has been on everybody, for anybody who's been in a fight if you have siblings and you've been in a fight with your brother, immediately after the fight, mm-hmm. you have that immediate like, I just needed to get that out of my system.
Yeah.
Like, we just needed to get that over with.
Everything's out in the air open now. And yeah. Then you can start to redefine the boundaries. So I think before we can find the center of a room, you got to know where the walls are, right?
Yeah.
Have you guys ever seen the movie Cube or Hypercube?
Never heard of it.
Okay, so it's a bunch of people that are stuck in this cube, and then it's a tesseract. Well, then the first one, it's like a gigantic underground like maze that's filled with like traps, and it's more like a horror film. The second one's called Cube 2, Hypercube, and it's a tesseract. So it's the same room folded in on space over itself over and over and over again. And these people get placed in there as like these experimentation, right? So pretty cool sci-fi. But a good study of how people react under pressure in situations and things like that. And the obvious thing to come out of it, aside from like you don't know where the center is, like they're trying to find a way out, you don't know where the center is, they can't map it until they find the edges. And so that's one thing that kind of correlates to what I was saying. But also, people only work together in as far as much as they share common goals. That's just human nature. So I think one of the things was we were delineating so hard what the right stood for and what the left stood for, we didn't figure out what we both stood for.
Yeah.
And then that's where the communication breaks down, is because for good communication, of course, you come in with your opinions and your facts, right? But you need to have more, if you have less places to, if you end up in, after a dialogue, an honest, open dialogue where you're willing to understand and change some things about yourself, and you, if you come out of that with less common places than you have places where you're standing by yourself, then nothing's going to get done. And I think that's why this campaign seemed to kind of get stuck on its wheels. It was kind of 18 months of the same thing over and over and over again. It's because it got stuck in these ruts, these wheels. Like, we're still spinning on what makes us different.
The only voices we heard were the ones at the outer edges of both parties. The ones that just thought, like, I will just yell louder and longer to you. And so at some point, like, people in the middle were like, look, I'm just tired. Like, whatever. Like, obviously you won't shut up.
And difference was like a huge factor. We're like celebrating our differences, and I'm Hispanic American, and I'm a woman, and I'm gay. And then, you know, the Trump supporters like, well, I support, the right to life, and I support gun control, and I support this. And it's like all these differences, and it's like, wait. Don't we all still want to like have some place where we can, you know, make some money together and like not have a trade deficit and things like that. We kind of lost sight of where we could be common allies too. And that's the point of that Hypercube 2 movie, is that they all fucked each other over in the end and they couldn't get out of the cube. Spoilers. because they couldn't agree. They couldn't find enough commonality between their vastly different personalities to agree on a plan to find how the Tesseract worked and to escape it. They ended up kind of going off on their own ways and kind of psychologically breaking and self-identifying with themselves and kind of figuring out ways to put up barriers, break communication, instead of cooperating. And eventually, none of them escaped the cube. They all killed each other or got killed by the cube, except for this one lady that escaped it. And then the government fucking killed her anyway. But let's talk about like
that sounds like my kind of happy ending.
Unhappy, yeah, right.
Quan's
hashtag Quan's happy ending. So I think case in point, it just needs to be, we need to redefine what the left and right stand for before we can find a center to work from, and keep the dialogue and the platforms open and measure our commonality. I think we need to measure one in terms of the other. I think we stopped measuring commonality and difference in terms of each other. I think we started trying to institutionalize difference and institutionalize commonality instead of measuring one by the other and then reaching an accord.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So we focus a lot on, speaking of balancing things and looking at one thing in terms of another, we focused a lot on what went wrong with this election. Now, I'm going to ask you guys a difficult question. What do you think this election did right? Where did it succeed? I mean, you've got to go a little bit Life of Brian here, Monty Python. Always look on the bright side of life.
What did it do right? Wow, that's a hard question.
Exactly, right? Oh, did I just Trump stump you? I stumped you.
I think that, I mean,
how did
for
we
myself,
succeed?
For myself, like the silver lining, the silver lining for me is this, is that we are having this discussion right now. Three individuals that under any other like normal circumstance, even on our day-to-day lives, even though we interact with each other on a, you know, relatively frequent basis, we can actually have this conversation, and we can have that, like, that perspective. Like, we might not agree on everything, but
we can talk about,
like,
it.
this has been such a grueling process for everybody that just talking to you about it makes me feel better.
Yeah.
Having this simple conversation is making me feel better.
I'll go ahead and add to that. I don't know what this election did right. I think that what the results did, as shocking as it was for everybody, I think it tore the lid off the sucker and got some people to realize, hey, something's messed up here. And like, I mean, like you said, Juan, we're having this conversation now, and having had some conversations with some people over the last couple of days, a mix of liberals and conservatives a mixture of the more thoughtful ones who don't lean to the extremes are actually people are starting to say, you know what, we gotta, you know, something's weird here. And like I'm hoping that if the best thing that comes out of this is that we start talking as a people again rather than playing identity politics. Yes.
So we can all agree it opened up the lines of communication, because what I think happened here, and I mean, this is I think this is the result of a long developing problem. We had 2000 to 2008, which was Republican dominated. There was a lot of injury, a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety after 9/11. There was a lot of, you know, conservative pushback. There was the market crash. There was, you know, the Iraq war. A lot of fear and anxiety bred this kind of new world of terrorism, fear, uncertainty, of, you know, a lot of coming of age of the LGBTQ movement, of veterans affairs, you know, coming back from the Iraq war, things like that. There was so much technology progressed so fast. There was so much change in the first decade of this millennium, right? And then we backlashed into the Obama administration, like he ran on hope. And then we started bandaging up all these things. But we know, I think what happened is, as good as that, as the Obama presidency was, and as tumultuous as the Bush presidency was for this country and as a track and as what we took it through this world, is that as a nation, there was a whole bunch of wounds, and we started putting Band-Aids over these wounds, and we didn't talk about them. And I think what happened is they got infected, and this election and this and what happened here kind of ripped it off. Like the intention,
exposed all those things.
The intention with the Band-Aids are good, but it was a process of temporary solutions to deeper problems. And I think now we rip them back open, at the very least, we have an opportunity to properly dress those wounds with the right antibiotics, and get some actual medicine into this nation via open dialogue and some actual like cross-partisan communication, real communication. We have the opportunity. I'm not saying it's going to happen. We have the opportunity. We could just, you know, this administration could just throw Band-Aids back on, and we could be doing this all over again in 8 years. But that's, I think, the positive that came out of this, is that like we have seen the wounds for what they actually are underneath.
Yeah, that's the the not talking about an issue allows resentment to fester, and I'm just hoping this opportunity really pays off, because you know, if it's bad now, 2016, what's it going to be like in 2020?
I don't know, man.
Yeah,
but I would say like a lot of the issues that we experience as a country are coming to light, and Ivan touched on this last time we talked to him too, where the actual true racists and bigots and xenophobes of this country, they're all showing their light. And you know what? This Trump administration isn't going to be around for 8 years. It'll like, it's lucky that it's going to go through these 4 years. And all these people can't just rescind to the shadows all of a sudden. Like all these issues that have come up, we won't be able to just ignore them, because we already know that they're there.
The chips are out now, and that's good. And I think, you know, honesty and transparency, you know, to a degree, especially with these big issues, is good. We get them all on the table. And now we have, and even in these, like you said, Juan and Mars, these weeks post election, I've had more chance to talk about these issues with more people. I mean, you know, in the training business, I interact with a whole bunch of people on a daily basis. I talk to, you know, 20, 30 people a day. A lot of them are new people, all have different perspectives. I have very conservative clients. I have very liberal clients. I meet new people with all sorts of races and ethnicities and backgrounds, from the Middle East, from the Far East, from all over America. I mean, I come into a wide contact, and, you know, a lot of our conversations have revolved around this, and I feel like it's a little bit more open world now. And I think that's a good thing.
Hopefully it stays that way.
I'm sure Trump will keep it that way. I think he's still going to be causing a ruckus. And the more ruckus there is, the more talk's going to go on.
That. No doubt about that. But like,
I hope he keeps shaking
I'll end it with saying this. It's like, you know, for everyone out there who's listening, who's interested in like joining the conversation, there's a little bit of advice that was passed to me through a friend who was also a big fan of Richard Feynman. Like, you know, and a conversation requires that you listen. Conversation requires compassion for the other side, that you actually try to make an effort to try to listen to what the other guy's saying.
Richard Feynman being the nuclear physicist, the theoretical physicist?
Yeah. Okay. And he's also, it requires being able to be willing to admit that this side might be right, and a willingness to provide your beliefs. But like, conversation also requires intellectual honesty with yourself, and maybe being honest with yourself and saying maybe you don't know everything. And like, you know, there's one line that Feynman puts out there that I think everyone, including ourselves, needs to hear, because we do this to ourselves as well. The first person you must not fool is yourself, and you are the easiest person to fool.
Yeah.
Check your thinking.
Yeah, I mean,
check your thinking.
It seems like we're going around having all these like beautiful like thoughts that should be put on T-shirts. I think I might have had the same one last time we had this conversation. For me, I think that we all want to change the world. Like, we all wish the world would be different, and you can't just wield things to be different. And you have to start with yourself. If you want things to change for the better, you change for the better first.
Yep, that's the only way.
Get involved.
Everybody wants to change the world. All right, Nerd Funnelers, if you have thoughts, opinions on any variety of these topics, feel free to engage with us at in the comments on nerdfunnel.com, on our Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdfunnel, on our YouTube page at youtube.com/nerdfunnel, or tweet us at nerdfunnel on Instagram. If you have any literature, movies, games, video games, anything you want to tweet at us or chat with us about that help you relate to these issues, please feel free. We want to expand our worldview. Pop our bubbles. Challenge us. We want to be challenged. We throw the gauntlet to you, and we hope we throw the gauntlet to you tonight, and we hope that you can throw the gauntlet right back at us. So until next time,
find a life and live it.
Find a life and live it.
Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper, and check yourself. Check your thinking. That's as Juan said, that's as good as it gets, man. Until next time, you've been nerd funneled.